and have been working with Brian Weaver and John Hinskin at DPI in the area of wellness and health and physical education. Because of the time, I'm just going to read this. 3S is a holistic physiological and emotional self-management practice based on current brain research on exercise, happiness, and increased learning. 3S trained teachers strive to empower students through a few minutes of modeling the 3S tools daily in the classroom, giving students a creative way to effectively deal with everyday stress and how it affects them physically as well as emotionally. With DPI clock hours in mind, 3S is purposefully movement, breath-oriented, and brain-based learning that seeks to increase instructional time and student learning while establishing a new wellness paradigm for affecting positive behavior responses, stress reduction, and a stronger sense of community for all who use it. And Martha's overall comment was she indicated how different and compatible and supportive 3S is, and that it is really not to be like in competition with any other behavior management program as per above the line or whatever. So the reason I'm here is I'm really seeking, and 3S Smart Learning System folks are seeking to come and present a longer presentation to the board about our, it's spread to 23 schools in the district in 1 year, with teachers self-electing and self-referring and paying out of their pocket for the training. So it's been recommended that we bring it to your attention, and that teachers and students have been very, very positive about it. So, okay. Thank you.
The next item is announcements, and there are no announcements. We have three items on the agenda for tonight. I just want to kind of give an update or give an overview of how I'd like to proceed. On the Fine Arts Task Force, I really just want to give a very short update on where things are with that. And then we'll spend about 40 minutes on the four-year-old kindergarten and 40 minutes or so on the student performance. My goal really for the four-year-old kindergarten is to have discussion and, if possible, refer further discussions on this to the full board to see if this is something they would like to pursue as a full board and perhaps get it referred back to the committee. But I would really like to have the buy-in of the full board if this is something they'd like to pursue further. On the model to measure student performance, the goal for that tonight is really to get further information from the administration, and then we will have, and to ask some of the questions that we didn't have a chance to ask last time. And then we will have another meeting on this in October, where the hope is that we can start incorporating some of this into our district goals and then make a recommendation to the full board on how we might do that. But that would be in the meeting in October. Okay, so with that, if the other board members would like to come up to the table, we'd love to have them. It's up to you. The Fine Arts Task Force, I just wanted to give an update on this. The Fine Arts Task Force is something that the full board approved earlier, I guess in January of this year, at the recommendation of the Performance and Achievement Committee. They have been meeting and have been very active. And one of the things we asked them to do was to come back with community input on what they would like to, on what the community would like to see in the district's arts program. And so the Fine Arts Task Force will be doing a survey. It's based upon the Kennedy Center survey, where they're asking for that input. And I believe the board president will be doing a letter soon to the community just telling folks that we're going to be doing the survey and asking people to participate. So we will, right now, we may have a presentation from the Fine Arts Task Force in November, just a preliminary presentation if they're ready to give us something. If not, it may be a little bit later. So any questions on that? Just kind of an update. Okay, on the next item then is four-year-old kindergarten, and I will turn it over to Superintendent Rainwater.
Thank you. I'm going to try to do a couple of three things about four-year-old kindergarten tonight. First of all is to walk through some data about what our four-year-olds look like in the school district. What we have, this data is based on our kindergarten screener. If the board wishes, we can probably get a little bit better look at this even than this by using our fall play data, which we'll have in the middle of October. This actually represents about 60% of our kindergartners who actually take the screener before they come to school. This, if you look at this bar graph, starting on the left with each cluster of bars, and the one on the far left is Native American, starts with the 2004 year, is the light blue, and then moves to 2008, which is the dark purple on the far right. This is looking at our students by ethnicity. If you look, our Southeast Asian students enter school, more than 70% of them are in need of supportive services when they come into the school district based on our kindergarten screener. In the case of Southeast Asian, a lot of that is language. Same thing would be true of our Latino kids. But this gives you a look at what percentage of the kids, and if you think about it, the reverse of this would be how many kids are ready for kindergarten. So if you look at, for example, if you look at our African-American population, about 58% or so of our African-American students who take the screener are ready for kindergarten when they enter. Okay. This breaks it down by income. Again, if you look at our low-income students, only about 41% or so of our low-income students are in fact ready for kindergarten when they enter. That number has been decreasing over time, so roughly 59% are not ready. This looks at our special education students. Again, this is pretty much to be expected because students who are already have an IEP or students who are identified in the early childhood program as having a significant disability and have been receiving services in some cases literally since birth. And in our case, we provide those services after the age of 3. So this would not be unexpected in terms of services. This is English language proficiency. Again, most of the children who enter, who are English language learners, are coming out of homes where another language is the home language, and those children, again, typically would be expected to not be ready for an English language kindergarten. We do this, I'm pretty sure that, and I apologize, Sue was supposed to do this, and Sue is actually in the process of becoming a grandmother as we speak. I believe we do the screener in also in Spanish, do we not? Okay. So given that, this would indicate kids, if they speak no English, would have been given this in Spanish. So that's kind of a look at our kids as they come in. We can do deeper looks than this, but as an overall look, this is a look that our low-income children and our minority children, typically 50% or more of them, enter school not prepared for kindergarten. And that's the group that we would target other kinds of services to before they come into school. The second thing you have, and I did not make a slide of this, but you received in your packet an update of the list that we sent to you earlier, which is all of the partnerships that we have as a school district with organizations outside the school district. In some cases, these are grants that we share. In some cases, it's our work. But these are all organizations that we work with that provide services to children before kindergarten. And what we've added to this is we took the information that you have here, and then in the middle of the page where it says targeted pre-K students, we have added, does that particular program address that population of students? So if you look at Launching into Literacy, which is our own program in partnership with a whole variety of people from United Way of Dane County through 4Cs. We have grants from Roundy's, UW School of Library Sciences, Meritor Children's Center, St. Mary's Children's Center, Madison Public Library, Dane County, UW Extension. All those people provide funding and support for that program. It addresses students of color, special education students, low-income students, and ELL students. So that particular program serves children across the gamut of the kids that we've looked at here. If you look down the list, without going through the whole list, if you look down the list, it shows what that particular program addresses. For example, if you look at East Madison Even Start, the Even Start program is a Title I funded program and is an Even Start grant. We're in partnership with Dane County Parent Council for that program, and it does not address special education students. So without walking through the whole thing, this tries to tie what we currently have in place prior to children entering kindergarten across the community and what children who need services are being addressed. Any questions about that?
I may have missed this. Do we have numbers on the total number of students, total number of kindergartners, and the total number that are eligible
we
for
do.
Supportive
this is a,
services?
This was handed out to you right before we started. Might make a couple of comments about it.
Could we turn up the lights?
Yeah. I've got a couple more later on in the presentation, but we can do it now. This is 2003, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in terms of the actual performance on the test. There were 2,000, for example, if you look at 2007, there are 2,074 kindergartners enrolled this year. There are some schools. This is an individual, the screener is an individual test that schools give to kids, and they use the individual kids' written test to make placements before they enter kindergarten. Each school then enters this information there, and you'll see that there are some that have not entered it yet. Because once they do that, then the information they use in terms of working with the children is the play that's given in the fall. So that's why I suggested when we get all the play scores in mid-October, it gives us a much better look at where children are than probably this does.
So the play has all kids? This, when you look at total tested versus total enrolled, it's maybe 60% only that are tested, is it?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit over 60 because it's 60% of what we have here. It's a little bit over 60 because there's some missing here.
Okay.
But the play will be everybody.
And does the play do something similar where they're given scores
yes.
like this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we have any information or can we track back, in other words, those students who aren't performing at the level that would be expected, do we have the information on what kind of preschool experience, if any, they had, and where?
We have some information. Our information is certainly not complete. There are some preschools that we know where they went and we have a record of. Many of them we do not. And we particularly don't know if they had if they had home child care, whether they were with a parent, a grandparent, a neighbor. We don't have that information.
Does the play have anything? Or, yeah, the play, does that have anything like that?
No, that would be demographic information that we don't collect very well. It's not something people have to give you. So,
do we have any information on the kids that have participated in our Kinder Ready programs or K Ready, the summer programs, and how they perform? Whether, because presumably this testing is before their participation in that.
Well, it depends, because the kindergarten screeners, many people take it back in the spring. Some take it right when they come to school. But what we can do is track Kinder Ready to the play test, because we know who was in that program, and we can track it to the play.
So would we have the play results for 2003 through 2006?
Yes.
And we could compare that to this?
Kinder Ready is only 2 years old, I think, if I remember correctly, two or three. Okay. So, yes, we can do that.
And who's eligible for the K-Ready? I see that we have one through four kind of on the levels on the kindergarten screener. Is anyone that's below one eligible for that, or is it just kids that are in level four?
My recollection is it does not come off the kindergarten screener, does it?
Yeah, the K-Ready for the summer school program does come off the screener. You have to have four or more checks to participate in summer school.
What does four or more checks mean?
That marks that you don't have this skill yet, so that would be a check mark.
Where does that address in terms of the severe, those categories? Do you know off the top of your head, Kirk?
Oh, yeah, maybe if it could come up, just because no one at home can hear.
Kurt, why don't you come on up, you and Steve.
You want to start? You can start the cameras. Thank you. Good evening. To be eligible for the summer school K-Ready program, students must take the screener and then have, I think we've said here, four checks on the screener to be eligible, four or more checks on the screener to be eligible. And the screener really is a way to kind of judge skills that they have coming in, and a check means they don't have that skill yet. It could be counting. It could be know your colors and shapes. It could be a range of things on the screener that we're looking for.
There are 13 items on the screener, and if you have a score of 4 or higher, you fall into the lower two categories of eligible for supportive services and severe.
So can you say that 13 categories?
There are 13 items on the 13 potential checks, if you will, points. And as you get more points, that's not a good thing. Most assessments, the more points you get, that's a good thing. Well, on the screener, it's not. And if you have four or more, you fall into the bottom two categories. So that's what makes you eligible for kindergarten ready.
And the categories are listed on the sheet that we handed out to you tonight, and they are
age appropriate,
borderline, eligible for supportive programming, and severe.
So, again, it's the bottom two categories that are K-ready.
I have a question about the partnerships. I mean, there's so many organizations, and how do we control what they're teaching it within those different preschool programs? Or how do we...
Well, many of them we actually control in terms of the programming. For example, Launching into Literacy is really run by us and our staff. Although there are many partners, we determine the curriculum to it. Even Starts would be the same thing. They are actually grants and things that we partner with other people on, but we pretty much control the curriculum. African American Ethnic Academy, we do not. That program is actually, as you know, funded from our grant program in Fund 80, although it has typically been staffed by either our staff or our retired staff, and they've worked very hard to align what they do academically with what the district does, and we've always been very comfortable with them. The 4K pilot, which no longer is in existence, again, was ours in conjunction with the university. The Preschools of Hope is a partnership in which we, through Kathy Price and Rita Keel of our staff, pretty much control the content of the curriculum. The Play and Learns would be the same thing. I'm trying to see if there's one that didn't. The STAR program is actually run by Annie Odom, and she has, again, worked with our staff over many years to align what she does with what's expected of our kids. So I think all of them that I see are pretty much either work very hard aligning with us, or we actually control the curriculum. So I think it's safe to say we're comfortable with all these in terms of what they do, you know, within the limits of what they have. So.
I just have a quick question, Superintendent. Has there been any, I mean, obviously this is an impressive list of partnerships that the district has in terms of preschool program. Have there been any conversations about, I guess, taking these partnerships into another level rather than, and again, I know that the board, at least hopefully, the issue will be taken to the full board to discuss 4K future programming, but doing something along the lines of more of a collaborative effort with everyone in the city, getting some outside funding, something along those lines, as opposed to, I guess I would say, the district taking over 4K in this community. Had there been any talk about that at all?
Well, I mean, certainly, I think relative to actual 4K, where we would offer universal four-year-old kindergarten, as you know, there were major discussions and efforts around what was called ELI, which was the Early Learning Initiative. We gave you information on that last time. There's an executive summary in here of it. Outside of that, almost all of these programs, with the exception of our early childhood program, our special ed early childhood program, have outside, some of the funding may be ours, but it also has outside funding attached to it. Probably the broadest ranging of these is the Preschools of Hope, and it actually serves children in childcare settings around the city, but primarily organized childcare. The Play and Learn program, which is just, we've had two sites now. The district has had two sites for Allied Drive for a couple of years, Vera Court this year for the first time, and we are discussing United Way is just expanding with a mobile center. They have a truck given by Two Men in a Truck that will allow them to visit five sites a week, and then we are right now looking at using some of our Title I funding to add an additional two or three vans to do the same thing that would allow Play and Learn to expand to up to 15 or 20 sites a week. And right now that particular program looks pretty good in terms of broad outreach to reach the students that we're talking about who enter kindergarten not prepared. The state of Hawaii has been doing Play and Learn for a long time, and they have good data backing it up. Obviously, ours is too young to have data to tell how effective ours is going to be, but the concept is good and enables us to go in and reaching the people in organized child care, whether that's accredited or not, is one thing, and Preschools of Hope does that and some other things. But there's a huge number of our children, particularly the children we see that enter kindergarten not ready, there's a huge number of those children who aren't in organized child care in the sense of being in a center. They're actually at home with a relative, they're with a neighbor, or they're in somebody's running a 3 or 4 child care in the apartment complex, or those kind of things. Play and Learn is really designed to go in and serve that need, and in the process help parents. And it actually starts from basically at zero. So it's really there to help the parents both with learning how to promote literacy skills and those kind of things, but also there is a parenting component in terms of how to talk to your child and those kind of things that go with it that parents learn in the process of play. And I believe that our plan right now is to bring that to the board in October, to talk to the board through performance and achievement about expanding that program using Title I funds. And it appears to me to have the best potential for reaching a fairly broad audience of children who aren't in traditional kinds of child care.
Well, one of the things that, to me, it sounds like, obviously, you know, there's a bunch of kids that as a school district, we need to reach before they come to the district. And I don't know how to do that without more money. And, I'm sure people are up with suggestions. But in terms of, is there another way, another model, like a train-the-trainer model, where the district shows, here's what our curriculum is for kindergarten. Here's what we'd like you to teach. Here's what we'd like to get these students ready so when we get them, you know, they'll be that much further along. Again, models like that?
Yeah, that's exactly what launching into literacy is.
Sure, okay.
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 And that model, we believe, has been very effective. We reach very large number of child care providers through that, including home child care providers. So we get some people who come to that. I mean, that's exactly what it is. We're at least reaching people. I mean, one of the problems that we deal with is we train new people all the time because, as you know, because child care worker salaries are low, there's a tremendous amount of turnover in that. So you're always training new people to go in. But that model has reached a lot of people, and I think does exactly what you're talking about.
Thank you.
Maya?
So I'm not sure if Kurt would know this or not, but according to the tests, we're only testing 60% of the kids, according to this chart, that are kindergartners coming in the fall. Is that correct?
Yeah, kindergarten. Yes, kindergarten screening is an optional thing that parents choose to do or not do. And then, of course, there's just natural turnover, as you'd expect, at even during that 4 or 5 month period. So there are kids that walk in the door and get counted on the third Friday in September, mm-hmm. who may not have been in the community even, you know, 3 weeks before that.
Okay, and how would we know what the accuracy is? For this particular chart, without looking at the play model, are these numbers going to match in the graphs or reflect what's really going on in the community if we don't count that other 40%?
If what you're saying is how do these data reflect the persons who are assessed, I think you're absolutely correct in saying this is a reflection on who is assessed. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a reflection on every kindergartner that enters our doors in the fall. The assessment has a reason. There's a statutory reason in part for doing it, and we fulfill that statutory requirement. I would submit that looking at the entering play scores is a more comprehensive analysis of the entering kindergarten cohort.
Okay.
Yes.
And then is the play score, because I'm not familiar with that, is that very similar to, I mean, how does that align with the particular test that we're looking at today? Is it the same 13 points or?
No. The primary language arts assessment is a series of subtests that were created locally. We're approaching probably 10 years, I would say. And the assessments were selected on the basis of how they align to our standards, our literacy standards. Virtually legions of teachers were involved with helping us put those together at the time. And at kindergarten, it does reflect some similarity in that there are some letter identification tasks on the play that are also on the kindergarten screener. But there are some other things, too, such as something that's referred to as concepts about print, which is a pre-reading assessment. There is a dictation task as well on the play, which is to get at how they're, we refer to it as hearing sounds in words. So those are some of the subtests that constitute the play. The idea being that, again, they're aligned to entering kindergarten literacy standards, whereas the kindergarten screener is a broader array of cognitive skills.
Both are individual tests in the sense that it's not a
correct
fill in the blank.
Right.
It is the teacher
one-on-one.
Sits down one-on-one. With yeah. Both tests are like that. We believe the play itself is a much more comprehensive look at where that child is in terms of literacy than is our screen.
And it's aligning with our curriculum.
Exactly, which is, right, an important part. We wanted an assessment in that case that teachers could teach from when they had the results.
And the play is actually given K1 and 2. So
right.
And then the other thing is when the kindergartners come in, you say kindergarten eligible. Does that mean that we're talking 4 to 5 that year? Or, you know, some kids get held back. So I'm wondering where parents self-select and hold their kindergartner who's eligible back a whole year. I'm just wondering how we work with the age range.
We probably wouldn't have picked that up.
No, I think age level cohort is really, you know, what we try to encourage in terms of entry. Kindergarten isn't required,
right.
Obviously.
But there will periodically be, and these are usually by request, there will be parents. It's very possible somebody who helped their child back a year would
right.
not come in for the screener. They would
right.
need mm-hmm. to.
Mm-hmm.
But we also get requests for people who want to enroll their child early. And that requires taking the screener. You
mm-hmm.
can only get in through the screener.
Right.
And then there's a criteria that you have to meet as a child in order to be accepted into early admission.
And actually in that, there's a heavy emphasis on their daycare, their preschool provider, their early provider information feedback that we get as well.
I'm just anecdotally, as a parent who's gone through this now a few times, a lot of the white middle-class parents that I know of that have boys tend to hold them back if they're young kindergartners. And also, on the other hand, there's parents that are depending on daycare that really want to get their kids into kindergarten, and I'm trying to figure out how that would just affect the results so that we have a better picture of to make sure either the age cohorts match up. Not that it's a lot, but it could be
sure.
slightly.
Yeah, and maybe I could just ask if you want to talk about that more, you could probably do it after the meeting, just because we're running. We're using time. Arlene, you had a question, and then I want to ask some other things.
Actually, a comment to tie in with what Mr. Winston was saying. Superintendent, it might be helpful if you just give a quick overview of also the Born Learning Delegation. And although that comes pre-4K, it ties into, I think, some of the things Johnny was...
Yeah, the Born Learning Delegation, I'll do very quickly. The Born Learning Delegation was a group brought together by United Way. It's about 30 people. It involved everybody from child care providers themselves through pediatricians in town, the city, the state, a whole range of people, with the idea of looking at what we can do actually to address this issue early. A couple of three things. One thing that's coming out of it is expanding play and learn, and that's really where the two-men in the truck giving the truck came from. A second thing that's coming out of it is a very comprehensive screening to be, and this actually came from our pediatricians in the group, a very comprehensive screening early that would provide a consistent way across the city for doctors to look at kids and identify children that are at risk in a variety of categories, because almost all kids in our city go to a doctor. And so that's being worked on now. All the pediatricians in town use some kind of screening tool, but they don't all use the same one. So this would be moving toward a common screening tool, and then what they don't have that we're talking about that they're very interested in is then attaching that to, if this child does show an at-risk behavior in some category, what do you do about it? Who do you refer them to? We have all kinds of services in the city, but there's no connection between the two. So that's been the other one is some parent resources to go out into the community. So that's what born, and its report comes out in mid-October. Arlene has been on that with me. So mid-October, that report is coming out.
Thank you.
I think we would all agree that having our kids ready for kindergarten is something that's very important. We'd all like to see. And the question really is, what can we do in order to promote that? And four-year-old kindergarten is obviously one option. There may be other options, as Johnny was talking about, with some of the partnerships. And I think the other thing that seems pretty obvious is that there's a lot of questions out there yet on what's effective, how can we get our kids ready, you know, what types of programs are effective, whether four-year-old kindergarten is something this community wants and is ready for. But I think besides that, that there are also a number of challenges in trying to implement four-year-old kindergarten if that is something that we want to pursue. And I think the superintendent's memo to the board addressed some of those. So I guess before we go a lot further on this, I would suggest that we move this to the full board to get their agreement that this is something that they would like to proceed with, and perhaps some direction on what should be the next step. Should we be gathering more information generally about different programs and what might work? Should we be going to the community and getting input on what they would like to see? What should be the next step? And then it very well may be that after the board has that full discussion, that it comes back to the Partnerships and Achievement or Performance and Achievement or a different committee to work on this. But I think it's very important that we have that full board discussion and kind of agreement on how we want to proceed.
Is that a motion?
I'd like you to make that motion.
Well, I'll so move that motion. All that motion.
Okay, any discussion? We also had information in our packets about some different processes we could use in order to get community input, and that perhaps we can then use when we talk about with the full board if that's what we want to do. Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And I would also ask that in the meantime, since we will put it on the full board agenda, that if there's other information we would like to see or any of the board members would like to see about our kindergartners, our incoming kindergartners, that we let staff know so we can start pulling those things together. All right. Thank you very, very much. The next item on our agenda is a model to measure student performance with ties to district goals.
I've asked Kurt to really take some of the things that you learned with Rob Meyer and his people from UW and from Kurt and put those into what is at this point a draft model that we've actually modeled somewhat off of what Milwaukee Public Schools is currently doing and what Rob and his people at UW are doing. So ask him to kind of walk through that with you. And then at the close of this, if we have time, I'll walk through a goal structure proposal that I also put in your thing that ties into this in terms of what district goals would look like.
Well, good evening, everyone. I thank you for the opportunity to come back again this time to talk a little bit more about where we're heading with our growth goals, where we're proposing to go. If you recall from the conversation we had with Rob Meyer, Dr. Meyer from the Value-Added Research Center at the Wisconsin Center for Educational Research, what we are proposing to do is to move ahead with the concept of growth goals as opposed to what we have been looking at for the past several years, which are basically what are called status model goals, where we're looking at the same groups of kids, different groups of kids every year as we move through the testing in grades 3 through 8 in both reading and math. As you understand today, we've got a fourth grade, used to be a third grade, a fourth grade reading goal, and that was all set around the notion of doing, looking at the proportion of children who are meeting the proficient or advanced performance levels. What we're suggesting that we move to now that we have the benefit of assessing the same children in the same subject areas on a continuous basis annually through grades from grades 3 through 8 is that we actually look at how those children's performance changes over time. That's what's referred to as a growth measure. So what we would be doing is annually taking the data for an entering third grader who's tested in November, comparing that to the data that's available for that same student 1 year later in fourth grade, and measuring how much change has occurred from 1 year to the next. Now, in the lexicon of growth models, there are different ways to actually do that calculation. There are some simple methods that simply say, okay, here was the child's score, and in the WKCE, they're measured in something called scale scores. Here's their score in year one, and here's their score in year two, and let's just subtract the two and come up with the difference. What we're proposing is that we adopt a special class of growth models that are actually called value-added models. The value-added comes about from controlling for the effects of different kinds of external factors, such as poverty, mobility, parent education, English language proficiency, and race and ethnicity, among other things. We will be exploring whatever data we do have available to us in our student information system to help us control for what we believe are external factors. The idea of controlling for those external factors is that once you have those things held constant, what's left is truly how much learning has gone on. Obviously, you can't control for everything. We certainly don't have every kind of factor that could influence a student's performance in our system. But nonetheless, we have several things that certainly the literature would suggest have strong mediating circumstances. So what we would be looking at in our district as a district goal is to look at the composite overall average growth for the district across all schools and all grade levels in the areas of both reading and math. So in other words, we're trying to calculate how much growth is occurring for every child and averaging that in those two domains, reading and math.
If I could, the value-added part really says if you control for everything else, what did the district contribute to that growth? So you're controlling for all the other factors and you're trying to narrow down to what did the district provide in that growth? Same way when you do it at the school level. So that's really where the value-added comes from, is what value did the district add to that child's growth? And that's really what we're trying to measure here.
It's very simple. People suggest that there are things that affect kids' learning. Poverty, parent education, mobility. And what this is trying to do is to simply say, okay, let's hold that statistically constant, and then what's left should be the learning process that's going on. Okay? So again, we've got two big growth goals that we're talking about as introducing as new district goals, grade 3 through 8 in reading, grade 3 through 8 in math. Again, as I was describing, growth as value added. Value added is a special class of growth goals. It is indeed looking at student achievement over time. Individual children, how is their performance changing over time? And I'll understand it's not always linear. It's not just, you know, they move in a straight line, you know, hopefully in a positive direction. It will move up and down over time. There's no question. But what we're looking for to some extent, steady growth over time in a positive way. As I mentioned, it'll be based on the WKC scale scores. The WKC is a vertically scaled test, which means that you start at one end in third grade and you move up through 10th grade, but we're looking at through 8th grade as the consistent, the consecutive series of grade levels. Which makes the, statistically speaking, makes this growth modeling possible. In the past, when we had grades 4 and 8 as our testing points, testing years, there was, well, first of all, you had differences in children that could be huge from, you know, grade 4 to grade 8, just in terms of normal enrollment and attrition and that sort of thing. So, but in this case, we'll have, again, a reading score and a math score that is on a consistent scale in each of those six consecutive grades. And as I mentioned, what we plan on controlling for in our external factors are what you see there, income status, mobility, parent education, the number of adults in the household, race, ethnicity, English language proficiency, gender, and special education status.
I believe I'm correct, too. I mean, I've heard Rob Meyer say many times, one of the major predictors of where children end up is where they start. So this also controls
absolutely
for where they start.
Right. So in other words, their scale score from the prior year will be one of the predictive factors for the coming year.
So wouldn't one of the concerns be, though, that it would have a low expectation built into it, that if you're a student that already started with certain disadvantages, that you would expect then that student to always be behind, and at the end when they graduate behind, then that's just fine because we'd still meet our... Isn't that a concern with using that kind of...
Well, one of the things that we intend to do is to look at that data to examine what expectations are. It could be very well that for kids who start lower, that we actually expect more growth. In other words, we don't have to necessarily look at this as, we will be looking at it obviously on a district goal basis as a goal for the district, the aggregate figure. But clearly when we're looking at schools and school as well as individual student growth expectations, we would be looking for a sufficient number amount of growth that helps to close the gaps, mm-hmm. the gaps that exist.
I think we have to think about that when we set our district goals, whatever they would be, that it doesn't have that somehow built into it, whether it's, you know, a couple of steps or however.
Yeah, this is one of the things I think Kurt will talk about a few minutes later. The thing that we don't know right now that we still have to work on is how big, if we're looking at the district-wide and we're saying, okay, the district 3 through 8 is going to grow by this many scale points as a whole district. That's taking each individual kid, controlling for all those factors, going to grow by this much as a district. That's the number we don't know right now that Kurt will be working with Rob and others and looking at. Because there are other school districts around the country who have been doing this for a while, and we can look at their data and say, okay, what do kids who look like this grow? What do kids who look like this grow? So we can then measure that. One of the other things that this does is that we would when this is in the model, when this is actually in the formula, each one of these items has a coefficient that goes with it that is measuring how much effect that has on the model. And one of the things that you want to do is you want to reduce that coefficient. That's what's actually closing the gap, is reducing that coefficient. So that's the other thing that we internally, and one of the things on the chart that I gave you down at a lower level of our goals and our diagnostics, that's what we're looking at, is when we're thinking about income status, instead of looking at this many low-income kids were proficient, next year was this many, we're looking at reducing that. Say that coefficient was 0.6. Well, next year we want that coefficient to be 0.4. So you're eventually trying to get to zero. I mean, the ultimate goal out there sometime long after I'm gone, but the ultimate goal would be that none of these factors would affect the child's learning. That the only thing that would affect the child's learning would be what we provide. So that's what we're looking at in terms of closing the gap. We're looking at those coefficients that go with that and continually trying to reduce those, which then results in, obviously, right, the whole district.
So one of the things, one of the metrics that we'll want to be paying attention to are those coefficients themselves every year. What are they? How have they changed over time?
Are those something that you set in the model, or are those something that are actually...
They're a result of the calculation every year when you do the model calculation.
So it's not an input, it's an output.
No, it's an output.
No.
No, they can move. They move over time. And the whole notion is, I mean, think of it. Generally, the way the income status coefficient is factored in, it's usually, most of these are kind of zero and one, yes, no kinds of variables in the equation. And typically on the income status, it's a one if you're low income, and it's a zero if you're not low income. So that as you make more, as you score higher, you tend to be a zero, a non-low income. So the coefficient's actually a negative value, okay? What we want to do is we want to get that thing to be absolutely null. I mean, you want it to have basically no effect, so that it really doesn't matter if you're a zero, not low income, or a one, low income.
Because the calculation creates the coefficient based on that.
Yeah. The actual statistical model is what derives the coefficient value.
Maya?
So there's other districts around the country that use this. Do you know whether... Wisconsin DPI, what they're using, or if they've, I've heard that they're going to a growth model, but I don't know if it was this kind.
Right. The DPI right now is looking at different kinds of growth models, mm-hmm. and their intention is to study the different types of models. Mm-hmm. They've not made any decision one way or the other at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, one of the districts we have a lot of conversations with about this is our neighbors to the east of us in Milwaukee, and they use a value-added model in their approach, which incorporates these kinds of variables.
One other question I had on the district-wide average component.
Mm-hmm.
Could someone say that, well, you know, as we do, if we do worse as a district, well, then we just, the district-wide average goes down, so then we don't look as bad. Do you know what I'm saying? That if you're comparing yourself to an average of yourself, and that average declines, that then your comparison is less rigorous.
Let me address it the way I think it is, and Kirk can correct me. If we're looking district-wide, okay, the goal will be that goes up.
Each year that the average
that goes
up.
Okay, so that's the goal. So if you go down, you obviously don't. Now, the question is, how much does that go up? So then if your goal is that it goes up, and what's positive for the district is going up, then comparing individual schools to district average is a legitimate measure. So the two things And on the model that I gave you, the two things are tied together in the sense that going up is positive, going down is negative. So.
Yeah, I mean, the intent is, as I would portray these growth metrics, is that they would be a continuous increase in terms of growth.
And I totally agree with using this measure. What I just want to know is how, you know, for the board, as we think about how we're going to translate those into goals, you know, which are nice, snappy little sentences in a way that makes sense and that we can measure year to year. So that I'm just thinking about that.
As we've talked about what a goal would look like, and we've talked about that the district's growth will increase by X scale scores so that it is portrayed as a positive change and continuing to get higher and higher and higher.
Maya?
So I actually do have a reluctance on going this path. One is because we're relying on one test, the WKCE. And what I'm trying to figure out is how is this going to tie into specific individual improving student performance? Because a teacher in the classroom knows that these tests they're not given out until later on in the year. Is it fall, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
And if we have a goal, where's the feedback mechanism for that teacher to change his or her instruction and be the most helpful for the individual student? One thing that concerns me is if we start off with third grade, we're only taking a snapshot of that child's. It depends on the day they had, the teacher they had. Statistically, that's not a good place to start, but we're starting as a beginning point and saying that's an adequate beginning point, and I don't know if necessarily it is. I also think that we're missing the kids on each end of the spectrum that we're most concerned of. You know, the standard deviation is such that we're only getting 95% or two-thirds of the kids on a bell curve, and we're missing out on those kids far out because statistically you're not going to be as sure, I don't think, you know, of whether those scores are accurate. You know, example is if you test a kid and they test 100 next year, how are you going to test that they're going to go over 100? They're going to kind of peak at the end there, and you're going to miss those kids. I just want to know why are we using WKCE, and how is that going to tie into our curriculum and our standards and student improvement so that it ends up back in the classroom and not just kind of measuring test scores.
Let me address part of that, and then I'll let Kurt address the statistics of it. First of all, the WKCE is tied to the standards. It specifically measures the standards. But this kind of measurement is not expected to do the day-to-day informing of instruction inside the classroom, and it never has been. We've never depended on the WKCE as how a teacher will do the diagnostic testing in their classroom of where they go. That's the assessments that they do just in time in their own classroom. That's teacher observation. That's looking at the child as I talk. That's understanding the child's body language and the way that. And if you're even a halfway decent teacher, I can tell that the person isn't understanding this, and then the follow up that comes with that. So the informing the instruction occurs inside the classroom on a day to day basis. But the WKCE is tied to standards. So in an overall measure for the district and an overall measure for a school, it's a fairly legitimate measure. All of us would prefer to have multiple ways to measure that. Okay, that's not the case. And so we have to take what we have, which is the WKCE, and take this. Now, when you look underneath this, on the document that I sent to you, when you look at the actual model, the full model itself, we're looking at standards, measures, and those kind of things much lower than it. But at the classroom level, the teacher is doing those assessments, how to conduct instruction on an ongoing basis. For example, in math, we have just-in-time assessments that they use. It's the things that they do day-to-day in the classroom. Those are the things that inform their instruction. What we have to be sure of is that they understand what they're doing in terms of what they're doing inside the classroom and what strategies do we apply to that. Surrounding that whole thing is our student intervention monitoring system, which takes all that information and links it to what kinds of interventions occur for children who are, in fact, at a certain level. And a little bit later, I can walk through what the full model, and you can see how it works. But this is a legitimate way of looking at the overall district performance. It's not intended to look at and say, this is where this child is every day of their life. This is where the district was on a given day and where the school was on a given day.
Well, and that's the clarification I need, because sometimes I think when people at home are listening to value-added or growth models, they're assuming that we're talking about the individual child, that we're not talking about the school district. And I think this is a school district picture, and I'm trying to figure out how, as a board member, we get an assessment of some sort or a good idea of what's going on in the classroom so that we can make decisions for budget and so forth that tie into that curriculum. And I think those are two different things that we're talking about.
Right. And so as part of performance and achievement, my goal has been to take what we have as goals for the district, reading at fourth grade, everyone taking algebra at ninth grade, district attendance, and looking at 94%, and whether we should refine those now that we've had those in place for, I don't know, how many years?
Nine.
Is it time to refine those? And those are district-wide goals, and that's really what the effort of looking at this at the performance and achievement level at this time is. Whether we can take that further in the future, that's something we can look at. But I really, from my perspective, with committee level, I'm not looking at this point to try to individually say what should be going on in the classroom. These are really refinements of the district goals if we feel comfortable in doing that. And that's really... But I think Maya asked a really good question about... You know, this, what we had up here, talks about grades 3 through 8.
Right.
What do we do grades kindergarten through 2 and 9 through 12?
Right. Well, as it relates to district goals, we're not suggesting that we use... Let me just back up. In answering in part what Maya was asking and kind of reiterating what the superintendent was describing, there are different purposes for different assessments. And the WKC is clearly an accountability assessment. And that's exactly what we're suggesting that it be used for in this case. We also, as I mentioned earlier, we have the primary language arts assessment, the primary math assessment. Those are locally developed criterion referenced assessments that teachers created in conjunction with our staff to measure student achievement that informs instruction. And that is what gets used in kindergarten through second grade. We don't believe that those should be used for accountability measures, but they should be used for school improvement planning measures, for program evaluation, and to some extent, but primarily they should be used for informing instruction. So our district accountability starts in third grade with a test that's clearly designed to do the kind of measurement that we're suggesting here.
And if you look at the chart, this one that looks like this, if you get it, you will see the play and PMA growth as operational goals.
Correct.
For us.
Right.
We're looking at that.
Right.
But I think that's a concern. At least that'll be a concern for me when we talk about this as a full board, because I mean, I've heard a number of times that if a child's not reading at third grade, they're going to have difficulty going on. And so to start measuring the accountability piece at third grade seems to me to be rather late. And I think we need to be doing something before then. And if it's not play,
I think we need to come up with another measure. I guess I'm not comfortable with just saying we as a district don't have a measure until third grade.
I think we do have a measure.
Yes,
I think one of the things that you'll find in most of the literature, and one of the reasons why we developed the PLUT was because there really aren't good summative measures from K to 3, because children develop reading skills at very different rates. And just because a child looks like this in first grade doesn't mean that that child doesn't all of a sudden the light go on in second grade and that child reads as well as anybody else. If they haven't developed that by third grade, that's where the problem begins. We use the play in a series of profiles of what children who are have the potential to be unsuccessful look like to target interventions to that child. But it's very difficult to use a summative measure between K and 3 that means something just because of the different rates that children develop the skill of reading. And it doesn't translate into the fact this child won't be a good reader. You may very well have a child that learns to read in second grade that's as good a reader as anybody else by fourth grade. So that's the reason why we've designed it the way we did. And again, we're looking at the play growth rate internally as we do that, and we can certainly report that, but it's a district-wide goal. My own belief is it's not an appropriate measure, and that there is no K-3 appropriate summative measure.
Let me just point out.
Part of the reason because the play is individually administered, and if it was used for accountability purposes, that it might be administered differently?
I don't know that it would be. I mean, the potential's there for doing something like that. There's no question. We're trying to, when we developed that, we made very explicit to the group that we were working with at the time. And I think philosophically we hold to this today, that the primary purpose of that assessment is to inform instruction. And it's not to measure accountability of the district. Do we bridge that to some extent by using it for school improvement planning? Absolutely. And the schools get their data every year summarized in ways that they can use that. Do we use it for program evaluation? You bet. When we've done the, for instance, the summer school, the extended learning summer school program evaluation, that's exactly what we've used. When we've looked at the effects of lowering class sizes, that we've used that data for that kind of a purpose as well. But we've deliberately steered away from using that as a district accountability goal. I want to point out, too, though, that understand that our third grade test score that we are offering here, you realize that is a November of third grade test. So for all intents and purposes, it's a better reflection of their second grade reading ability.
Maya?
Can you explain whether the WKCE is that a norm referenced?
The WKCE is a norm referenced. Well,
and what would the play be?
The WKCE is a norm reference test that the Department of Public Instruction would define as criterion reference to the Wisconsin Model Academic Standards. It's a test that can meet both definitions.
Okay.
The primary language arts assessment is clearly a criterion referenced assessment mm-hmm. aligned to our literacy standards.
And what the WKCE is the Terra Nova, or a derivative of the Terra Nova, which is a norm reference test that DPI has made a criterion reference test.
There are state percentile ranks that you can get off of that test, normative reference.
So, and then what about the 9th through 12th grade?
We have two legitimate, fairly legitimate measures that we can use. The 10th grade WKCE flows in this same sequence of things.
Right.
We believe it is not a good measure. And the reason we believe that, and Kurt can elaborate on this, is because the kids in the 10th grade don't take it seriously. It has no bearing on their life. And so Its accuracy is questionable.
And the test itself is a fine test in terms of the psychometric principles of it. I mean, it was normed the same way that the grades 3 through 8 was. The problem we have with 10th grade is that there are no stakes associated with it at the child level, so therefore they don't take it as seriously. In 8th grade, of course, you know that there is some there are some individual stakes associated with it because the district policy about promotion at 8th grade weighs into that, 4th grade as well. But at 10th grade, I get stories all the time of students who take that not very seriously. So we would prefer not using that as an accountability measure per se. The state, of course, will require that for adequate yearly progress, and you know. But for what we feel that it's doing, it's not as well positioned as some other metrics that we would propose at high school.
But I believe I'm correct that if the board wanted to, we could fit it into the growth model.
Yes,
like
you
this.
Could.
The growth would
yeah.
be from 8 to 10.
Correct.
So you jump 2 years with that growth.
Yeah, which introduces some messiness in the, as you can well imagine, you know, the gap between 8th and 10th grade. But.
Did you want to present the draft of the model?
Yeah. Let me spend a couple minutes with you.
Do you want to do the rest of this one, or do you want to jump into here? Basically, what I was saying was that we would have the average growth across all schools. We'd look at the growth rate as the superintendent had mentioned. The key is how much is enough growth, and we need to look at the literature. We need to look at other school districts, and we're going to use WCER to help us investigate that as well. And just to reiterate, at the school level, we'll be looking at beating the odds. In other words, how are schools performing relative to each other once you control for those factors in a couple of different ways. One is tiers, and the handout that I gave you this evening is a description from Milwaukee Public Schools about how they present that. Their tiered growth ranges are around that district average. So they're looking at how did schools perform around the district average for growth. And then they do another thing called quadrant analysis, which takes, just to take a look at it, and this is sort of a reiteration of what Dr. Meyer presented last time, you can look at schools along two dimensions, one being the value added or growth, that's the horizontal axis there, and then on the vertical is attainment, or just how in overall, how well did they do in terms of, you define it as scale scores, generally the average scale score for the school. So what you can have are high performing in terms of average scale score schools, that's the upper half, and then if you move to the right, you'll see schools that are in that upper right quadrant would be, yeah, the kids score very well on average scale score, but they're also scoring very well in terms of making growth over time. The lower left would be, of course, where you wouldn't want to see schools, low attainment and low value added. But note that in the lower right, you can also have schools that aren't necessarily doing really well in terms of their average score from year to year, but the kids' growth over time is significant. This is where you might have a high poverty school. A high poverty school would have a low average score, attainment score. But their growth could be pretty significant. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking, quite honestly, as it relates, because we're trying to emphasize growth over time and the effect of learning and not these other external factors, we want to see schools moving to the right on that chart. Okay?
Does Milwaukee only have the grade 3 through 8 in this kind of chart?
Yes. Yep, 3 through 8. Mm-hmm. Well, they actually test in 9th grade also, so they use high school 9-10. They do the off-grade. They purchase that test in the off-grade.
But nothing for kindergarten?
No, their accountability starts in grade 3. And again, we're pinning this on a vertically scaled test that has psychometric principles that we're comfortable with. So,
but if you look at the growth, the value-added growth analysis by school, 3 here, the third tier would be the average. And the bands you see, because every test has a margin of error built into it. And so what you see is the dark square is where they actually scored, and the band you see around it is where statistically we would be. They will fit somewhere on taking that test again and again and again. They'll fit somewhere within that band of scores.
And that's to reiterate what.
Can we get the lights up?
Okay.
Where's Marcia?
We lost Marcia. Does anybody know how to adjust the lights?
So when you're looking at, if they're in that third tier, that's the average. That's the district average would be in that. As you go down to the left, you're going below the district average. If you think about this as three being the mean and these others being, they're not exactly standard deviations, but if you think about them that way. So if you go up toward six, you're going above the district average. The closer up toward six you get, the more above the district average you are.
I think it's important to point out that that error band gets at, I think, Maya, what you were suggesting, which is that on any given day, yeah, with a test like this, anything can happen. So there's an error. There is error associated with it. You're measuring one very complex thing called reading using one measure. So we have to respect the fact that there is the possibility of it being slightly below that or slightly above that point, and that's what this represents. The other thing that I think that's real important, and it's what I meant by the bullet up there that said longitudinal growth measurement, which seems redundant, is that we want to look at growth measures not just in 1 year, but we want to see patterns of growth over time within a school. So, for instance, as you see with this graph, Milwaukee has presented this as a three-year a growth statistic. And if a school consistently is in that upper tier, in other words, they're beating the district average consistently from year to year to year, that's sustained change. And that's the sort of thing that we would be looking for. Okay? Granted, there will always be, because of the adequate yearly progress accountability model for the state that exists today and will probably continue for at least some time until they adopt, if they just choose to adopt some growth models, the standard attainment measures. And those are just the percentage of kids that are proficient and advanced from 1 year for a given year.
So here's my question. If I'm a board member and we get a report like this from Audubon Middle School,
yep.
And I want to know whether our math is working or our reading is working. And I look at year 2002, 2003. Well, that's kind of our starting point, I would assume. And math looks like it's going every which way, and reading looks more balanced. Can I assume that our reading is on track and that the kids are learning and they're growing? Or why are we getting this huge dip in math? I mean,
why
what would
is math
I do?
More variable?
Yeah.
Why is math more variable?
Well, what would I do as a board member to make a decision?
I would not make a decision based on a single school's scores. I think you make the decision based on the overall district progress. You don't ever want to go in as a board member, I don't think. You never want to go in and take a single school and make a decision about a broad curricular program based on the performance of a single school. You make those decisions based on the district, overall district movement, and based on program evaluation. So I would never suggest that the board go in and base purely on test scores. You make decisions about curriculum, and particularly, first of all, curriculum is the standards, which we don't have a lot to say about. But in terms of the pedagogy you're using, that needs to be a program evaluation in terms of getting below those overall district test scores and saying, okay, what are the standards aren't we meeting? Why aren't we meeting them? Are the things we're doing being implemented? What's the level of implementation of the program that we're providing? Those kind of things. So the individual school scores are to look at that individual school and go in and say, okay, why is this going on in mathematics in your school? Because every other school may be going up. And that school may be doing that. So the question becomes, and that's what we do. Okay, the question becomes, what is it with this school? And that's what our school improvement planning is all about. School improvement planning is looking at that school and looking at its performance at the item analysis level of what's happening And by going in and looking at what teaching is going on in that school and saying, okay, why is everybody else going up and you're not? Now, if nobody's going up, that's where the board says, whoa, we need to find out why that's true as a district and then get at program evaluation of specific things we're doing. And I think that's typically the way you would use it.
So we've got about 5 more minutes left to our meeting. I guess I'd like you to go over the rest of the handout on the district goal structure, because that will then set us up for our next meeting
right. Next
month on this issue.
I'll try to do this very quick just so you know more than anything else what you have. What we're proposing is the first structure that you see is an overall look at what the goal structure would be, starting with a district level goal, which is a broad look at how the whole district does, disaggregated the way we've always disaggregated it. That is supported by a set of operational goals, and I'll go through those in just a second. That's supported by a set of operational goals that we have as a district staff that we're looking at that we believe make that district goal happen. Each one of those operational goals has a diagnostic assessment or set of diagnostic assessments that we look at to make the operational goal happen. And then all this is occurring. We're looking at operational goals at the school level. What's happening at that school? How do our diagnostic assessments look? At the student level, we're using the standards level analysis of how kids are performing to say, okay, what does this child look like compared to what the child should look like if they're going to be successful? And then if the student isn't meeting that profile, if the student looks like they're not going to be successful, what interventions do we need to provide for that student? Or if the child is being successful, what kind of support do we need to provide that student to go further? So we're doing both. So that's the overall structure. If you turn to the next chart, and it gives you, and let me be very clear, these are all drafts. Okay? So don't take any of this to the bank. This is all drafts. We're proposing 4 district goals, and attached to this is a definition of what those goals would be, is this document.
And just those would be, if the board adopts them, those would be revisions of our current
goals. With one additional goal.
Okay.
We're proposing that the board adopt a math goal that would be based on growth and would be much like we talked about. The district average will grow by X scale scores per year. And that's measured as an aggregate across grades 3 through 8. We're proposing reading growth the same way, aggregated across 3 through 8 with a growth standard based on some number of scale scores growth. We're proposing that attendance stay exactly the same way it is now. We are adding a high school graduation rate goal, because when all is said and done, that's probably the ultimate measure of what we're trying to do, is high school graduation. If you look underneath that very quickly, for example, if you look at math growth, our operational goals as a staff, as an administration, we're looking at school-level WKCE growth. We're looking at each individual school. We're looking at completion, what I call gateway completion for mathematics, which means how many people are actually completing algebra and how many people are actually completing geometry. Because that's a measure of how much math they learned coming up. And then we're looking at demographic factor analysis. This is what I talked about, what we talked about a little bit earlier, where we're looking at those coefficients and we're saying, okay, for that school, did their race and ethnicity effect go down? Did their low income go down? And then we're looking at their PMA growth rate. That's the primary math assessment growth rate that we're looking at. All those things we believe lead to meeting the math goal. And if we have a school that's not performing in all those areas, that's the point at which we go in with a school. They have to put that in their school improvement plan and make the changes. We propose to disaggregate both for the board and for our operational goals. We propose to disaggregate at a level further down in disaggregation than we have in the past. just because a child is low income doesn't mean that they're all the same within race. Just because a child is an African-American student, you need to break that down into low income, not low income. If you really want to get finance, you could break it down even further. But what we're really interested in looking at is a much finer analysis of the performance of our children. Because there's a difference. There's a difference between the performance of low-income children, for example, who are Southeast Asian, and children who aren't low-income and Southeast Asian. And that difference is important. And so we're proposing to disaggregate everything at a two-level structure. Attendance rates, we're looking at reading growth is very, very similar to math in terms of what we're looking at. Attendance, we're looking at school attendance. Diagnostically, we're looking at truancy rate, we're looking at tardy rate, and we're looking at absence rate as measures of school attendance that we believe as we change those, we change the overall attendance. And then high school graduation, we're looking at two things. One is progress toward graduation, which we're measuring by are they on track with the number of credits they have? Are they taking advanced courses? Do they have a personal learning plan, and how far along are they in completing that? And then lastly, we're looking at the ACT. We want to know how many people are taking it, what percentage of our kids are taking it, what percentage of our young kids are taking the Explore, which is a pre-ACT that's a good predictor for us, and then what's the ACT average subject score, which feeds in. We believe those two things inform us and are things we can address in terms of high school graduation rate. So that's the structure as we see it right this minute, draft.
Would the board get it broken down also by school on the math and the reading goal?
Yes. So, we would see the schools, at the school level, we would see you getting the value-added analysis that we saw here.
Okay. So for our next meeting then, I guess what I would anticipate is that we have a list of what our current district goals are, and then maybe another column with the proposed change that we could consider, and then we can have that discussion at our next meeting and decide whether we would want to recommend those changes to the full board. Does that make sense for the committee that we proceed that way?
Yes.
And our plan would be to have what we would propose is board goals completely fleshed out in terms of how much growth and all those things.
And would you also have